Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. This is episode 86. I'm your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
And this is a sad week. Oh my gosh.
It is a sad week, but, you know, personally, it's also been a busy week for me.
It's a busy week. It was a busy weekend for me, too, but we are coming to you guys less than 72 hours after the biggest incident involving firearms and the loss of lives.
Are you sick, girl?
No, I just woke up right before we...
The
biggest loss of lives involving firearms in a shooting in the United States history. In Las Vegas, a single shooter took 59 lives and wounded over 500 people.
At a country concert, girl.
Country music concert in Las Vegas. And it is.
And at this point, you guys have all heard this, but it's huge. Everyone's talking about it right now.
Right. Well, yes, of course, the whole world has heard about it at this point. It is.
And there's a lot of talk about, like, gun control laws and all this other stuff going on. There's a lot going on around this topic right now.
Yes. And it's.
That's just waking up and your alarm's just now going. Your alarm goes off in the middle of the day like this, girl.
Well, I set an alarm. I laid down to take a nap before Pearl came over, and I set an alarm, and it just went off. So, anyway, yes, it is a situation that is bringing to light once again. It feels like every couple of years we have this
some mass shooting or something, girl. You know, we can't keep it together.
Yeah, some mass shooting that brings to the forefront of conversation things that, like gun control laws and whatnot. Last time, of course, it was the shooting in the Pulse nightclub, wherein I think 49 people passed away. This time, we're up another 10 people over that, making this the largest mass shooting in U.S. history.
There's also been a lot of things going on. Two people were also found shot and killed out here in San Francisco's near Dolores Park yesterday morning.
Oh my God, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, right here in our own backyard. If you're out here in the city, girls, man and a woman, girl, both shot.
Well, you know, what this really comes down to, and the reason that people are so very much pushing for gun control laws in the United States, is because one individual...
That's all it takes.
One individual...
That is all it takes.
...had enough firearms and enough firepower to kill 59 people and wound over 500. Of course, I'm sure that part of those 500 weren't... You know, not everybody was shot or wounded in that way, but... Because of the panic and everything like that, you know, people were getting pushed down and, like, trying in their, you know, the effort to stay alive and to avoid being slaughtered at this thing. Like, so many people were injured. But it's absolutely horrendous to think that one person could carry into a hotel room. This person, through multiple visits to the hotel, was able to smuggle in all of these firearms wherein he could shoot so many people.
Speaking of tragedy, though, girl, there's also everything going on in Puerto Rico right now, which is just awful.
Yes.
Awful. And I saw, like, a video of the president out there, literally throwing paper towels in the audience like their gifts. Like, their little football gifts. And it's like, what are you doing?
Well...
And it took him long enough to respond to them. There are people that have died, like, in hospitals and stuff because they've had no power.
Yes. It's
been doom and gloom out here, girl.
It has been. And it's been very difficult. I will say that for me, because of the fact that I feel like every day it's like some kind of a new, something new and horrible. You wake up and you're like, it's just some new horrible event has happened. And
yeah.
And not only is it some new horrible event, but I really feel like as a country, we, like in the past when something horrible has happened, we had our president, President Obama, was like so well-spoken and so eloquent about this and so compassionate and wonderful. And there was some hope. It felt like there was hope because we had wonderful leadership here, even if things were bad, like we had some mm-hmm. wonderful leadership. And, you know, it just is really becoming increasingly difficult for some of us to not feel like we're all going to end up dead, girl. He's going to kill us all.
Or someone's going to blow us up, or someone else is going to shoot us before he gets to us. This is going to be one of the three.
It's been very much feeling that way. So.
Or Mother Nature's going to come get us, girl, because she's fucking up everything, too.
It's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
That is true as well. So, anyway, let us shift gears a little bit. This past weekend was Pearl's first big performance.
Yeah, it was my first gig over at Asia SF where I actually got to perform on stage, girl. Yes.
So, tell us what was that like?
That was so... I mean, I was... of course, you know, each stage is different. You've been on different stages. You know right. that each stage is different. This stage is obviously different because you're, like, on a
bar.
A tabletop that's behind, like, connected to a bar. Just the energy that I've got from the crowd itself there was completely different. Like, when the crowd goes up there, you have to, like, stay in and make sure you don't get knocked off the stage just by the energy alone. It's incredible, though. It's incredible. It's a great feeling being on that stage. It's a complete privilege. I loved it. I can't wait to start working on more numbers and stuff that so I can do different things there besides the one number that I have so far. But
so this bomb. This was the number that Ronnie Reddick and crew helped you choreograph. Or
Ronnie Reddick is gonna choreograph every number that I have at AJSF.
Okay.
Ronnie Reddick is a choreographer to all the girls at AJSF. He used to choreograph for other celebrities and stuff, but I don't really know his resume like that. I want to say he's worked for Janet Jackson. I know he's auditioned for Madonna recently, but didn't make it to the finals. I know out of like 300,000 people, he made it to like the top 300 or 30 or something crazy like that. But they have some really amazing people working with us there.
Yes. That is very cool.
Yeah. And right before that though, girl, I had the brunch show over at the Lookout with Carne Asada. Girl, it was a long day that day. It was a very long day that day, and my feet did not want me to do anything the next day.
Yeah, I saw your post on Facebook about it. So it was funny because I saw your post on Facebook about how long your day was and whatever, and I must not have seen it at the same time like that it had been posted because I'd been like really busy that weekend, and then right after that is when I saw the first things about that shooting in Las Vegas. And I was like, see, like, this is what happens. Like, 1 minute, it really made me think about things in perspective. Because, like, 1 minute, like, I'm seeing you, you're like, oh, my feet are hurting. And then, like, the next minute, people are, like, dying at a concert. And I was like, you know, that's really what those people at that concert were, like, feeling like, too. 1 minute, they had, like, one set of problems, and then, like, the next second, like, seconds later, it was something, like, something totally different. I mean, really, it was, like, and it's not to make light of that situation at all, but it really, like, that's how it happened in my, like, when I was looking at that, and then because I was getting ready to go to bed, because I'd had, like, a super long day, too, so it was obviously Sunday, and I'd seen your post from, like, the night before, or whatever, and then just as I was laying down to go to sleep, I saw all that information starting to come up. And it just was so strange to me how, like, it really felt like this is how life is. Like, one moment you got some random set of problems, and then the next moment something completely fucking out of left field happens. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just, everything can be turned upside down.
In a split second, girl.
Yeah, and I mean, I was looking today, you know, of course, whenever something like this happens, like, everybody wants to know all about, like the information, like who did we lose in this shooting and whatever. And
right.
And once again, I was looking through photos, not even nearly all of the people who had passed away, only the people who initially they knew. And we're talking like the age range is like many, many people in their early 20s. One young man was like 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
There were men and women, and not to like guesstimate just based on photos, but one of them was gay, like one of the people who, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's just, and I also, there's something else that I saw too that it was in relation to this. So one of the people who was one of the, like the musicians who was involved in this, who was performing at the time of this shooting, he made a social media post where it was like an extended thing where he said that he has been a long time supporter of the Second Amendment, which Second Amendment is the right to bear arms, everybody. In the U.S. Constitution.
For those that don't know.
Is the Second Amendment is the right to bear arms. And he said he's been a long time supporter of that. And then, you know, because, and one of the big things, the arguments behind that is like, well, you know, in moments when we're in trouble or whatever, we need the right to bear arms. So this guy posted in the social media thing that he totally now, after this incident, has a different perspective, because even though they had, like, I guess, firearms in this, in their place where, like, they, I guess they ran and got on, like, the tour bus or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they had firearms, but for a number of reasons, they didn't feel comfortable using it. First of all, like, they weren't in a position to defend themselves because they didn't even know who was shooting.
Right.
But also, they were aware that if they started shooting anything or whatever, then the police, when they came looking, were going to be, they were going to be right. under suspicion.
Right.
And so they couldn't even defend themselves in that capacity.
Well, not defend themselves, but defend the people that were getting shot.
Right. Like, they couldn't defend anyone. They couldn't do anything about this situation. And the guy said, oh, you know, now I have a completely different perspective. And part of me, like, when I read that, I was like, okay, well, I'm glad that you have a different perspective now. Like, I do think that because of the demographic of people that this is impacting, it'll shift maybe some perspectives. But then I thought to myself, what an entitled fucking asshole you were,
and,
like, are just...
But you know what? That's, like, the perspective of a lot of people. A lot of people will sit here and claim one side until some shit happens to them, and then it's like, right. Oh, well, actually, you know what?
Exactly.
Now, bitch, you weren't saying that 2 minutes ago.
Exactly. And that's what I thought.
Until,
like,
it happens to your
how
ass.
How fucking entitled. Until it happens to you, oh, that could never happen, or oh,
you could do this, this, and this. Well, bitch, why didn't you do this and this when this was going on?
Or it's, this you know, time. Like, that's, the people are misconstruing this, or whatever. I mean, you guys,
right.
We're talking, like, this humongous issue with gun control in the United States has been ongoing for many years, but in my lifetime, like, in the last 20 years, we experienced the shooting at Sandy Hook, which is a... like an elementary school where
right.
many, many young children, like we're talking kindergarten through fifth grade or whatever, their lives were taken, and somebody somewhere had the fucking balls to suggest that no, like, you know, that we don't need gun control. No, right. No, guns don't kill people.
People kill people.
Well, that's fine. I saw one person, I thought this was, you know, I saw a tweet from an individual who said, I am an emergency room physician. And yes, there are other ways of that people who have mental instability can injure others, but by far, shooting is the worst. Another person tweeted, when I hear of somebody killing 59 people and injuring 500 with a knife, I'll call for knife control too. But, like, the fact is...
That's not happening.
That's not happening nowhere, girl. It's, you know, I do understand... And once again, I said this when we had the situation in Orlando, and I'll say it again now. I understand the right to bear arms. I do understand that. I also understand that that specific amendment was written when your ass had to be able to defend from a bear breaking into your fucking log cabin to eat your ass alive. And you know why you had a right to bear arms and you should have multiple firearms? Because you had a fucking musket. It took you 15 right. minutes to stuff the gunpowder into that shit. Nobody, when that was written, could have ever fathomed that there would be such thing as right. a machine gun. Much right. less, there's no way that anybody, when the Second Amendment was written, would have ever been able to foretell that one person with a single pull of a trigger for 15 seconds could wipe out 20 to 30 people, period. It wasn't even something fathomable at the time. Oh, girl.
But yeah, girl, this happened, and...
Whatever. I'm sorry. I took us right back there. It's just been really, really on my mind. So, like, it's... Lately, I've been, like, feeling very emotional about shit, and there's been all kinds of just one thing after another that seems like it's happening that's really fucking getting my goat.
Yeah, be lucky you're not one of the people experiencing this shit.
I am lucky, and I am, like, I am... Y'all, if y'all are hearing that on the microphone, it's because Pearl's, like, sitting where I was eating some spaghetti and doing makeup all at the same time. Because I sure was putting my makeup on while eating spaghetti. But anyway, she's cleaning up around me, but...
Cleaning up around me, so I can put my hands down without getting...
So it is something that... I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for the fact that, you know, this is not happening to people that are perhaps directly part of my life, but it's just the thought that the last thing I was thinking about, like, right before I went to sleep, as soon as I heard about this stuff, because I was awake when the first news broadcasts started coming out about Las Vegas, and initially, I mean, I even tweeted, like, is it two people that were killed or 20 people? Because... Like, I saw one thing that said two people were killed and, like, 20 were injured. And then the next thing
I saw... The numbers just kept going up. The numbers just kept going up because at one point it was 40 and then it went to, like, 50. Then it got even higher.
Yeah. I mean, So I went to bed and, like, the thought that I had when I went to sleep on that night was, like, you just fucking can't go anywhere. Teenagers going to see Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
Killed at a concert. People, young people.
Not too long ago, Christina Grimmie, who is a well-known YouTuber, she was shot at her own concert, and she's a very young person, like barely 21.
Right. She like had somebody. It was
and that
like
was in Florida.
Yes, it was after one of her concerts. She was at like a a meet and greet or whatever.
Literally around the corner from Pulse Nightclub the week before it happened.
So I mean, she's sitting there at her meet and greet with her fans. Somebody just walked up and shot her. You cannot. It's like. It's terrifying. It's like becoming a terrifying reality that we're living in that people...
Someone just don't come up to you and kill you, girl.
And it's really disturbing. And that's how I went to bed. And I've been really having like a hard time sort of shaking that thought for the last few days. It's just like, good God, doom and gloom. Like, it's sort of like when you start to think about like what is happening, you're like, well... For fuck's sake. You're getting on the bus and you're like afraid that, you know, the person next to you is gonna whatever or
girl, that's the story of my life. Shit.
Right. Well, so
now it's just extra girl. Now everyone feels it. Not to the same extent, of course.
Anyway, I also had a very busy weekend. I've spent a lot of both of us spent a significant amount of time with our girl Carney Asada. I worked with her on Saturday night after she did her brunch show with Pearl, and then again, I was over at the Port Bar in Oakland on Saturday evening, or Sunday evening, rather, for that show. It was really, really, actually a super good time. We were there with Woo Woo Monroe, and yeah, it was just a super busy weekend. And of course, I also, in the middle of that weekend, I recorded my very first interview for my new podcast, which is called Arm Drag Takedown with Poya Del Mar. You guys can check that out. It'll be coming soon, but it was a very busy weekend. And I just don't think I got enough sleep during the weekend also, which is probably why I was an emotional, like, wreck, whatever. But I'm trying to get myself back together on it. Anyway, let's take a quick break. I need to clear my head real quick. Pearl did wake me up, and I immediately started recording. So we'll be back in just a moment with more Party Foul Radio right after this. Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, Daddy's Barbershop. Located at 4102 19th Street in the Castro, Daddy's Barbershop was voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Daddy's Barbershop is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. To stay up to date on all the events in the LGBTQ nightlife scene in Northern California, pick up your copy of Left Magazine in the Castro today. featuring celebrity interviews, news, opinion, and gorgeous photo pictorials, Left Magazine is Northern California's most beautiful LGBTQ news and nightlife publication. Pick your copy up today or visit them at liveleft.com. That's liveleft.com. All right, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. Pearl's excited because she thinks that the show is going to run short and she's going to get out of here on a date. That means, you know what, you guys? No coffee for Pearl.
Hell no, girl. Nope.
You never know. You never know when she's going to have to give it up on a first date.
She's such a bitch.
Oh. No latte for her either. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. I just had a latte. We can't have nasty butt sex right now.
You know, coffee makes me use the restroom. Not coffee. Alcohol makes me use the restroom too, but not until the next day.
So Pearl said that she might be going out for drinks or whatever with this person. But she also said that it was kind of annoying because
I don't drink as much anymore. Not as much as I used to anyway.
See, now the fact is that like you're approaching a little bit more of an understanding of what my life is. Whenever I do get like asked out by some guy, they're always like, let's go out for drinks. And then I'm like, well, I don't really drink and I don't really want to get to know you in a bar environment. Like, I just don't think it's appropriate.
I can appreciate the bar environment because the bars I go to are not like Castro bars. Do you know what I mean? They're usually like nice lounge areas where you can sit down and hang out with someone. And there's usually like nice music playing, not like club, but like dance music and stuff like that. But I totally understand not wanting to drink every time you meet someone new.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's the social norm. It's like, let's go out for a cocktail. Let's go out for drinks. And I'm just like, well, I don't drink. And then, and when I say that, then,
so wait, what is your idea of a great first date where?
Well, I think that there's a difference between a great first date and just a first date, like a first meeting with somebody. What? I think that sometimes like if you, depending on where you met the person, if you've just been chatting with them online or something like that, mm-hmm. I don't think that a great first date is to be like expected from that. I think that quite often.
Okay, well, my question is, where is a good place to go to on a first date?
I think that, like, when you're first meeting somebody, like, a first meeting should be, like, let's go and, like, have, like, coffee or, like, get tea and talk or whatever. Just, like, because I want to know, I mean, really, why put a lot of effort into the first time face-to-face you're meeting with somebody mm-hmm. if you don't even know that there's going to be any chemistry? Like, if you go out with somebody and you go for coffee or whatever and you get to know them a little bit and you have a nice hour-long conversation or whatever, and then you decide you want to go out with them again because you're interested in them or whatever, then by all means, like, put in an effort. Like, plan something nice or do something that you think is, like, reflective of what one or the other of you likes and, you know, show some interest that way. But for the first time you're meeting with somebody, I don't think that... I don't know. I mean, when you think of, like, things that are, like, great, when, you know, you think of the idea of a great first date or whatever, that in itself, I think, implies, like, looking at dating as it was when that idea sort of was created, when you probably had actually met someone in person, like, whatever, or, like, and then kind of, like, felt little butterflies upon meeting them, and then you're like, oh, let's go out on a date, and then you know, you want to impress the person.
Girl, dating, this is a new age, girl. You have to realize we are not back when you were, like, a teenager.
But
not the same no more.
But that's the actual point I was just making, Pearl. So thank you for, like, supporting what I'm saying by being a moron. Like, I'm saying that, like, that is
not like what it used to be. Yes, it's not.
It's not like that anymore. So I think that...
So you think you should meet someone for, like, 5-10 minutes over coffee and then say, okay, well, we'll figure it out if we like this or not.
What I'm saying is that the idea of a great first date is almost a fallacy because of the fact that if you're, like, talking, if you meet somebody on Grindr or Scruff or...
Those are hoe apps. I'm not meeting someone on a hoe app.
it doesn't matter because I really think that hoe apps are only as hoe-ish as you make them. Because
I'm not going for that bullshit.
I disagree because I could meet the same exact people on Tinder... Or
Tinder's a hoe app.
Tinder is not a hoe app.
It's a swipe app. Yes, it is.
Yeah, but like, but it's not like Tinder is like classier than a
Scruff. Tinder is classy.
Classier.
Who is a moron now, girl? You just said Tinder was classy.
Classy? No, I didn't. I said classier.
Oh wow.
Than Scruff.
Wow,
or
you guys. Wow.
Like, I mean, even if you meet somebody on OkCupid, like, if you meet somebody, I can meet the same people on OkCupid. In fact, one of my favorite things when I was back on OkCupid was to use OkCupid to cross-reference people that I'd seen on Scruff or Grindr or wherever.
Because of an actual profile.
To learn a little bit more about them, yeah. So, the point being that, like...
That's the difference between a hoe app and a not hoe app, you guys.
Well, first of all, if you read how extensive my fucking app, my profile is on Scruff or Grindr, like, I don't treat it like a hoe app either. Because, like, I can meet somebody there, and if I like the way they look, then, like, I don't know how people are not aware of this, but if you swipe right, meaning that you like somebody, it doesn't automatically teleport them into your bed naked. Like, you get the choice between how you address the relationship or address the interaction. Like, I mean, and if somebody chats me up and the first thing they do is send me some nasty pictures, I'm done with that conversation. I'm not into it. So I'm not saying that other people don't treat these things that way, but I'm sure that you can get laid on Christian Mingle just as easily as anywhere else. If you're like a skank and you're on Christian Mingle, you know, first thing you want to do is talk about your titties or whatever it is you're talking about, then like it can be that too. But my point being in all of this is if you meet somebody online, no matter where that might be, and you decide that you're going to meet in person for something other than sex, like to get to know one another.
A great first date is a fallacy.
A great first date is a fallacy because...
Girl, I've had great first dates. Plenty of great first
dates. I'm not saying that it's not possible, but what I'm saying is that in the truest sense of the word, as it was established many years ago, when you would actually meet people in person and then invite them on a date, meaning you would already... seen them face to face and knew that there was some level of chemistry, like then if I were to go to whatever
even if I
went to a club and met somebody and we decided we were going to go on a date, then I would be a little more inclined to plan something that would be different. If I'm just meeting somebody for the first time to judge what the interaction is going to be like in person, then I'm like, let's go to coffee. Let's go to coffee, period. And then there's not anything beyond that. Like, I'm going to meet you for coffee. We can talk for like an hour or chit chat or whatever. And then if we like each other, then I will say, well, let's do this again sometime. And like, let's go on a real date. Yep. Pearl's looking confounded because she doesn't live in this world.
I don't live. I'm not a jaded, bitter old queen girl.
Girl, that's not jaded or bitter. That's not jaded or bitter at all. Like there's so many things that you cannot tell about somebody from interaction on a profile,
no.
Interaction in email, or even interaction on the phone.
You're not going to learn that within 5 to 10 minutes over coffee, girl.
Girl, but I didn't say 5 to 10 minutes. Pearl's the one who won't do coffee because of the fact that 5 minutes later, if she has to poop, it's going to ruin her fucking date. Like,
right.
I'm not that person. I'm like, let's go to coffee. This is a first time meeting. We can talk a little bit. We can see if there's sexual chemistry, if there's any kind of chemistry, like romantic, whatever there is. And then if there is, then we can follow up with this on another in-person meeting where it is like a real date. Like, that's why it's called a coffee date and versus like a real date where you go and you plan it. Activity and you go to dinner or whatever together. No, like that is really not how I operate.
Yeah.
No. And it doesn't have anything to do with being bitter or jaded.
No.
Like, no, but why would you put a significant amount of effort into a meeting with somebody that could end up being uncomfortable for both parties?
Well, girl, that's when you end the day early or you don't have a long date. That's the one thing convenient about having drinks, because it could just be one or two drinks, or you can stay out and continue getting to know that person, whatever.
You can do that over coffee, too. I mean, like...
I'm not going to have more than one cup of coffee. Hell no.
Well, no, girl. You, like...
Tripping.
Y'all, this is indicative of how fast Pearl drinks a cocktail. She's like... You can have 6 or 8 drinks, and then after that first 20 minutes together, then you can decide if you want another 20 minutes together.
Right.
Like, you get a cup of coffee, and you sip it, and you sit and talk for, like, an hour. And if you like the person, then you can be like, well, do you want to go grab some food or whatever? Like, I mean, I'm not going to... Because I'm actually, when it comes to dating, I'm actually a very romantic person. And I will put, like, a lot of effort into dates. Yes. I will do all this stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not going to spend hours plotting out some, like, wonderful occasion, and then I'm going to get there, and
no,
then...
No, you don't plan some, like, extravagant first date. I'm not saying that by all means. Holy shit, what did you think I was saying?
Well, like, that, like, a crazy amazing first date is an amazing first date.
No, girl, that is not... An amazing first date means a place you can go to get to know someone and, like, feel like you actually have a grasp on who they are and enjoy spending time both there and with the person.
You can do that over coffee. You can get to know a person over coffee and decide if you want to go on an amazing first date.
I can't get to know anybody over coffee, girl. If I'm just getting to know you over coffee, that was probably an interview.
So, well, that's the difference, because I don't drink... Like, I'm not up there drinking the booze, so... I really can't go for cocktails with these people. And it is problematic because every single time they're like, probably 75% of the time when I talk to somebody, they're like, let's go out for drinks together. And I'm like, oh, I don't drink. And they're like, oh, let's go to a bar and you can have a water. I'm like, no, bitch, I'm not going to be watching you. Like, no. To me, that's also a hard no, too, because it's like, you can't think of something else, like a different way to spend time, like getting to know somebody besides over cocktails. Like, that.
So what is it? You say coffee. Never mind.
Yeah, I think perfectly normal
for people that don't drink coffee. Well, where would they go?
Girl, you can go. There's all kinds of places that you can go. Like Castro's got that new, soda fountain place that you can go and you can get soda milkshakes or like.
Oh, I think I've seen.
Like
that.
It's a cute little place. You could go there, or you could just go somewhere for like.
I try to avoid the Castro at all costs on any date.
Right, well, for me, being in the Castro on a date is really bad news, because I can't walk down the street without seeing a bazillion people I know, or people stopping me, or, whatever. But there's other, there are people who, strangely enough, like, feel the most comfortable, like, just, you know, being on a gay date or whatever in the Castro. I'm not that person, I don't give a damn, I'll go anywhere, but there's, like... There's a lot of places that that two people can go just to sort of, like, chill. I used to really like this place called Samovar, which was, like, a tea bar.
A tea lounge, yeah.
Like, a tea lounge. It was very comfortable. It was tea, and it was cute, and it had a nice little atmosphere.
See, that sounds cute.
I mean, and you could sit on pillows and shit and whatever. Yeah. I mean, that was very cute. I had a few, wretched... First dates there.
Don't they serve, like, food and little snacks and stuff?
They do, but they are also out of business. Oh, like, the one in the Castro is out of business.
I think there's like, two more in the city.
Yeah, there's, little loungy things like that, I think, are good, or there's...
Those are places to go for a great first date, in my opinion.
To me, those are, like, opportunities to get to know someone, and then if I like the person, I will go on a great first date with them. But... It really, I just can't, I don't know. I think that there's so many factors that are involved.
Well,
when
is the last time you went on a date? Let's leave it at that, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, Never mind.
Yeah, I really, I don't know. How about, and by the way, remember when I was like talking about that person that I had a crush on? And I'm like, I don't know if it is a date or isn't a date. Well, how about I read on his Facebook how he went on some great date with a person?
Was it? Yep.
And he was all like, oh, I went on this date. And I was like, well, obviously, if we were had been on a date, he would have announced that it was some kind of a date. So, well, fuck you.
I don't even know what to say to that. But, girl, you win some, you lose a lot.
Yep. it kind of doesn't matter. I'm really not that super focused on it. But, yeah. It would be nice to go on a date, but I'm not going to, put that,
in that
tremendous amount of effort up.
Particularly, I think you have a problem with dating people that are just super attractive. Every time I feel like you've dated someone super attractive, you've always expressed your uncomfortability of it to me.
Well, I mean, I also tend to date people who are super attractive. Like, I don't really think of myself as dating people who are hideous.
Well, why is it that you are so uncomfortable with that, then?
With dating people who are hideous?
Or that are super attractive.
Oh, I don't know that I'm overly uncomfortable with it. I just am not, like, dating... We've already established 2 seconds ago that I'm not dating anyone, whether they're attractive or not. So, like, I don't really know that we can even speak to that. Because I'm not, like, I haven't gone out with anyone. I, like,
No, I'm saying I've had conversations with you before dating people that were super attractive and you expressed your uncomfortability.
Yeah, like, it. I mean, I do think it's uncomfortable, like, when you know that everyone around you is, like, hot to trot for the person you're going out with. And I've had that experience more than once. Like, I've had boyfriends who were, like, very, very hot, and, like, everybody was like, ew. And I'm like, oh, it does, it makes me uncomfortable. But, I mean, at the moment, we ain't got nothing going on, so nobody needs to worry about any of that.
I think that was my point. So at least you don't have to worry about that.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
So, in other news, almost as depressing as that, this week...
Is it Sam Smith?
Well, Sam Smith, she just saw one of the headlines.
That's depressing, girl.
Sam Smith's new single is actually really...
It's great.
It's great. Yeah. He's back with a vengeance. He debuted in the top 10 with Too Good at Goodbyes.
Yeah.
And
it's just so sad. And, more sad moves.
And he's recently been captured making out with a handsome actor in New York City. I will tell you this. I am not convinced that I like skinny Sam Smith as much as I like chubby Sam Smith.
I like chubby Sam Smith, but I like chubbier men, period. I'm not really attracted to skinny minis.
Well, I just think that I feel like, I don't know. I just think that there's something more relatable about a person like him who's singing these sad songs. Like, because, you know, one of the things that I do know for just, girl, go on your social media. If you have one of your friends who's like super hot and they're like, this guy was this or whatever, I just want to fucking punch him in the throat. And they're like bitching about like their relationship issues. I'm like, shut the fuck up. You're super hot. You're like, probably have some other man throwing himself at you in 2 seconds by the time you get done typing this. And so, like, Sam Smith being chubby was a little... It's like Adele. Like, Adele is more likable because she's a little chubby and everything. And, like, you connect with her in a different way because she's more relatable as a real person.
Is this why you've kept the weight on Pollo?
This is not. It's like, girl, I wish I could get rid of the weight. So, but actually what I was going to bring up was the fact that I can't find it on this damn news feed, that recently the UN, for the first time ever, placed in one of the things that came up to vote the mention of LGBTQ in terms of... Where is it? Damn it. Oh. The United Nations brought up for vote something that would abolish the death penalty. And the reason...
All these states voted... fucking against the ban.
Well, this is like countries.
Countries, my bad. Not
so
states.
The United Nations brought up...
Girl, do you know the United States was one of them?
Of course, right. And the United States voted against this ban on the death penalty. The thing that was record-breaking about this discussion about the death penalty at the United Nations was it was the first time ever that it was brought into discussion that such laws could be disproportionately used as punishment in various places around the world for people who are LGBTQ. So the reason that they were looking to possibly pass legislation at the United Nations level discouraging the death penalty was that it cited that people of color, people in various places because of religious affiliation, because of their sexual identity or gender identity, all become disproportionately victim to the death penalty. And the United States voted against this. They weren't alone. There were 13 other countries that voted against it and 7 countries that abstained from the discussion. And while LGBT groups are decrying the fact that the U.S. voted against this, with the implication in a lot of these being that it's because of it's anti-LGBT, the greater issue at hand here is multiple news sources are basically reporting what is extremely factual. And that is that the United States as a whole really likes the death penalty. Like, they recognize that if we were to kind of participate in this conversation at an international level, that it would ultimately be forced upon us at home. Because you cannot tell other countries, like, don't do this when half of the United States still participates in the death penalty.
Right.
And certainly it would be very hypocritical for the United States to cast a vote in this nature, suggesting that other places disproportionately use death penalty cases against people of color or whatever, when the reality is at home, our own penal system is overrun by a disproportionate amount of people of color who are incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that...
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It says that 13 countries voted against the resolution, including notoriously anti-LGBT states like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and even Japan. So...
China, too.
I mean,
China was on that list.
You know, there's like a whole bunch of people who voted against this. And, you know, on one hand, it was, I do think that it shows advances at the international level because of the fact that LGBT people were included in the argument against something like this, because it acknowledges an awareness internationally that there are states, meaning not states of the United States, but states around the world, that there are nations around the world where LGBT people are persecuted, incarcerated, and yes, even killed because of their sexual orientation and identity. And that includes recent reports that Egypt presently is escalating a crackdown of LGBT people and displays of the rainbow flag. So that's in Egypt. And of course, we talk about this almost every other episode, at least. We have a huge following of listeners within nations in Africa, and in most of those nations throughout Africa, LGBT people are at significant risk of persecution, oppression, and even death. So
I would say come here, but it's fucked up here, y'all. Go to Canada.
Right now, Canada is like indeed the beacon of hope. I mean, like, Jesus Christ, it's not good. So. Also in the news, a new genre of employment discrimination cases that could be the next battleground for supporters of LGBT rights are pushing towards the U.S. Supreme Court. So more than 2 years after the Supreme Court cleared the way for a same-sex marriage nationwide, plaintiffs want the justices to enable employees to use existing civil rights laws to sue for discrimination based on sexual orientation, meaning that if the U.S. Supreme Court were to log in on this, that people would not be able to be discriminated against in the workplace based on sexual orientation. The heart of this case is whether or not Title VII of the U.S. Civil Rights Act of 1964, a federal law that bans employment discrimination because of sex, meaning gender, also protects against claims of sexual orientation. In an unusual twist in the case, the Trump administration is on the opposite side from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, a federal agency charged with enforcing Title VII, meaning that the presidency is in opposition with this organization, which is supposed to enforce this, so that it's like there's a whole issue at work here. But eventually, that could be going in front of the U.S. Supreme Court as well, for some kind of resolution from the highest court in our land.
Yeah, y'all. So be careful out there. Also, in other news, girl, Hugh Hefner died too recently. That's
yes,
another one.
Hugh Hefner did, in fact, pass away 91 years old.
Yes.
91 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw a lot of different sides to this. Of course, many people were very sympathetic to the fact that he was an icon within the U.S. culture, and he created Playboy magazine, for which... Uh-huh. You know, like, generations, you know, adored that publication. And I saw other people who were saying, like, you know, good riddance, misogynist, who basically built his empire by taking advantage of women and all of this stuff. I suppose that there's some truth to both, because, you know, I do not think that either his personal life or his business practices necessarily were always the best. But I will tell you this. Very few publications in our culture today have had the kind of significance that Playboy magazine did in many, many instances. Playboy magazine could take stars and turn them into legends, and nobodies and turn them into icons. And he did that. I mean, I look at the fact that one of my ultimate beauty icons of all time is Anna Nicole Smith. And were it not for Playboy magazine launching her career, she would never have existed.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at some of the people like Pamela Anderson, who had such a huge significance in our culture, that was amplified tenfold by the fact that she was in Playboy. And the fact that he, you know, I think that there was some good that certainly came from that magazine, and he was 100% undoubtedly an all-American-style legend. You know what I mean? Like, him in his fucking red smoking jacket surrounded by all these women and whatever. The night that it was announced that he had passed away, I was reminded that many, many years ago, I went to a party at the Playboy Mansion, and it was a very interesting experience. So I'm sure that some people out there probably have familiarity with the Playboy Mansion in terms of like what it is like through pictures that they've seen or imagery or whatever. But I went back in the right at the beginning of 2000, 1999, 2000, a group of my friends from college and I had this online publication. We were right at the breaking time when publications were beginning to happen online and internet journalism was really beginning its journey. And we were among the first of the people that I knew that had a website like ours. And ironically, it was geared towards straight men because I was the staff gay and everybody else on the staff was great, but straight rather, not great, straight. We were all great. But anyway, we got invited because we had done a big series of profiles on women who had been in Playboy magazine, and a woman named Nariah Davis, she had been a Playmate in 1993, so this is going back a number of years, obviously.
Right.
But she was beautiful. She was so gorgeous, and I'm sure she probably still is. Very much cut from...
only sixth, girl. Damn.
Very much cut from the same cloth as Pamela Anderson. She looked very much like Pam Anderson.
I think a lot of the women that were on Playboy on that time looked like Pamela Anderson. They were all busty, beautiful, blonde women.
Yes, and well, that's been the case for most of Playboy. Right. It was like the big, busty blonde.
If you wanted to be somebody and you were a blonde girl, Playboy was a way to go.
So we went to the mansion, one of my friends from college, and I went to the mansion. And it's up this hill in the Hollywood Hills, and then you go up this winding driveway. And then you come in, and it was really weird because everyone sort of knows about the legendary grotto. The grotto is like an underground pool. You go into this thing, and it's like an underground pool where Hef had all these like sex parties and stuff. So we're in the grotto, and I'm surrounded by these Playboy playmates. And then beyond the grotto in the pool area, he actually has this huge cage, like this enormous cage, that is filled with real rabbits, like bunnies, like hopping around in there and stuff like that. And so the grounds was very interesting. We like took a little walk through the grounds, and this was back when I was like, when I was drinking. So I was like boozing it up with these Playboy playmates. And I remember like some of them were like flirting and hitting on me. And I was just, oh, that's so cute, y'all. Like my best friend from college who was there with me was like, why isn't this happening to me? And I was like, sorry about it. You know, he was straight. He's straight. So he would have loved it. But it was... And then throughout the entire party, Hugh Hefner never came and joined the party. Hugh Hefner stayed inside. And you could see him periodically through the window in his, like, red smoking jacket, the silk smoking jacket, mm-hmm. the whole nine thing. But we were there because St. Pauli Girl Beer had, at the time, they had, like, real St. Pauli girls, and they were all former Playboy playmates, and so it was a really incredible time, but a once-in-a-lifetime experience, certainly for me. And then, you know, that's what I was thinking about immediately when... I also remember taking these pictures at the time, because we were there covering it for the website, and I was like, ooh, I wonder what's in the Playboy bathroom. So I went in there, and I was, like, searching through the closet in the Playboy bathroom. And I was like, there's tampons in the bathroom. Ha, 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 ha. I mean, I just thought that was like, whatever. It is what it is, you guys.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace to Hugh Hefner.
Rest in peace, Hugh Hefner. His old ass. Like, pervert. I mean. So, yeah. I mean, I really want, like, now that he's dead, presumably, like, some of these women can probably tell the truth. I know that there's no way he was having sex.
I saw this huge article about Holly, and her claiming that she didn't know about all this other stuff and what she was getting into. And who knows? Who knows? I want to know what's going to happen to that house.
Well, I mean, that honestly...
that money, girl. Who's getting the money?
Well, he had a wife at the end, like a young woman was his wife, and she's going to get millions from his passing. I honestly think that they could probably turn the Playboy Mansion into a museum of sorts, right, for the magazine, and like put memorabilia in there and like leave it sort of the way it is. And I, you know, you think about Graceland, people go to see where Elvis lived and all this shit. And like,
is that what Graceland is?
Yeah. Graceland is where Elvis lived, and it's his mansion in Memphis, and people go and tour it and whatnot.
Huh.
If people would do that, like, certainly there's enough people from around the world who would love to have the tour of the Playboy Mansion. And, you know, you could set it, they could have all the, because there's already framed covers of all these iconic magazines and, like, autographs. Speaking of which, did you happen to read where Hugh Hefner is going to be buried?
No. I know somebody, like, people were trying to find out for a minute.
Well, he bought the plot at the Hollywood Hills Cemetery right next to Marilyn Monroe. He bought the plot next to hers. And some woman tweeted, I don't remember who it was, some famous female comedian or something tweeted, damn, you can't even die without somebody showing up saying, hey, can I sit here? Can I buy you a drink?
Right.
Like,
damn.
But of course, Marilyn Monroe had been in Playboy magazine, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, like, I definitely think that as they've done with Prince's Mansion in Minneapolis, turning it into a museum, the Playboy Mansion probably could be self-sustaining as a museum. It could probably be used to, you know, the magazine has been going through some up and down times in recent years, because for a while there they took...
Well, print is going out.
Right, it is going out. But they took the pictures of naked women or whatever out of the magazine, and discovered that that was not so great idea for them. And now they're back in, like, with nude pictures or whatever. But I definitely think that people would pay good, hard money to go up in there and see what it was like to be at the Playboy Mansion. So that's an idea for that. In terms of who's going to get the rest of the money, who knows? Like, I'm sure that he's been at death's door for long enough that people have had that shit divvied up for years, honey. You cannot be 91 years old and in not the best health for very long without people already, like, having shit spent before you even gone.
Right.
I mean, that is the truth of, like, the way things are.
That is so real.
I mean, they're, like, coming to take your body away, and bitches are already divvying up your shit. They're like, oh, this is really sad, as they're filling their pocketbook with all your belongings.
Right.
So.
Well.
All right, you guys, we are going to take a quick break, and we are going to hear from some of our sponsors. When we come back, we are going to have the first of two interviews this episode. We are going to have the second half of our interview with the incredible Patricia Arquette.
I almost had the wrong name.
Oh, my God.
Alexis.
No, and we will be talking extensively about Patricia's sister, Alexis.
Alexis, yeah.
Brace yourself. If you are listening at home, now would be a great time to push the pause button and perhaps get a tissue or two, because this second portion of the interview, the first half, if you tuned in, incredible. She's so vocal about things that she supports and loves. But this time we talk about her sister Alexis, the struggles that she had. There's a lot of subject matter, Pearl, that, like, probably would really speak to you. She's so empathetic to the transgender community, especially in light of her sister's struggles. So all of that and more coming up right after this break. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Omar.
And I'm Pearl T.
We'll be back in a moment. Party Foul Radio is brought to you in proud media sponsorship by GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is Australia's premier LGBTQ website. To stay abreast of all that's happening in the LGBTQ world down under, visit GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
Hi, it's Matt Matthews, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I am your co-host, Poya Del Mar. We, at this time, are going to rejoin the second half of our interview with 2015 Best Supporting Actress Academy Award winner Patricia Arquette. On episode 85, we talked extensively with Patricia about her sister Alexis, the movie industry, and much more, including her passion for LGBTQ-related causes. As we rejoin this interview, I have just begun the segue into talking about Alexis's personal life and her tragic passing at 47 years old in 2016.
Let's go now to Patricia Arquette on Party Foul Radio.
You can absolutely not discuss this if you don't want to. But the more recent reports of Alexis's passing touch on the fact that her death was as relations of long-term HIV infection and AIDS. And that wasn't reported initially. And I think that for many people in this day and age, the idea of someone in the United States specifically passing away of AIDS is still shocking because we have, you know, certainly made tremendous progressions in treatment and maintenance options for people with HIV infection. And it just seems so unlikely that a person, especially at the level of profile that Alexis has been throughout her life and her career, would succumb to AIDS in 2016. It is shocking. I mean, that's the only word that I can... And I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Well, I could talk a little bit about it. I think... I mean, forget Alexis for a moment. Yeah, there are great things, and HIV has come a long way in AIDS treatment over the years, but I'll get information all the time from people who are HIV positive or who do have AIDS who will say, oh my God, now my insurance company is denying this specific kind of medication. Now they're starting to deny this kind of medication. So I think that there's a lot more unchecked illness, not necessarily because there's not the medication, but because I think insurance is pulling more and more away from coverage of certain things that people actually need. I think there's also a big complication. I talked to a bunch of people, therapists and people who said they've worked with like a lot of transgender people and who are also HIV positive, and they said, you know, really their gender identity was more painful to them, their surgery, their self-identification in the world, than their HIV or AIDS status. Like, at the end of the day, they would rather die than not be who they felt they were.
Right.
So, you know, there's still a giant shame around HIV/AIDS. I even saw with Alexis, you know, and I would say, Alexis, you know, there's kids who die of leukemia, and it's not because God is mad at them. You just have a disease, that's all. Just like mom had breast cancer, just like all these things happen, like, but there's still such a societal shame, I think, about HIV and AIDS that people carry around with them. And I think that's part of the reason that sometimes people don't take as good care of themselves. I also think that bigotry, homophobia, a society that doesn't accept, embrace, and celebrate you, adds a subconscious layer into your life experience of pain. And I think that there's a lot of people that don't take great care of themselves, like Alexis would be on medication and then decide she didn't want to be on it anymore. And she didn't like the way it felt, and she didn't like this medication. She didn't like the side effects. She'd go on and off and on and off her meds, and it was really frustrating, you know. As somebody who loved her, like, Alexis, you have to take care of yourself. And if you don't care about you, care about me caring about you. Really freaks us all out when you don't take your meds, you know, when you get sick. So, I don't know, part of it, I think, is self-love, self-care, society you live in. And I think part of it is maybe, you know, that there's a subconscious not wanting to really be here anymore in this world that's so shitty.
I First of all, like, I respect the fact that this is a really difficult subject matter to talk about.
Yeah.
And, but the reason that I specifically ask is because of the fact that in the society we live in, the transgender populace has an abnormally high rate of infection, first of all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a huge part of that certainly stems from, I believe, self-perception based on their worth, their own mm-hmm. self-worth, because when a society tells you that you are not worth something or that you have no value,
yeah.
it, even the strongest person at some point in time begins to believe that or will suffer bouts of believing what they're told. And that's whether...
Or will say, then I don't want to be here anymore. At a certain point, like, I don't want to deal with this world anymore. It just, I think, is a constant kind of attack on yourself, and you've done really nothing. So I think that there's definitely a lot of that. And, you know, not in Alexis's case, but in a lot of people's cases, the trans community has very little opportunity. I mean, I've never seen a trans person working at McDonald's. I know they work at El Pollo Loco because the head of El Pollo Loco is a trans woman.
Absolutely. I read that story, too. I love
it. Which is awesome. I know. But other than that, in general, it's very difficult to even get a job as a trans person. And if you're a trans woman of color, I mean, really, good luck to you. It's like being at the bottom of the barrel of the American brutality of American employment. It's like they live on the lowest income of any group in America.
Yeah, my podcast co-host is a trans woman of color. She's half Filipino and half African American. And we've had that conversation many times on the podcast where she's so fortunate. She works in social work and had her career in a place like San Francisco before her transition, and it allowed her to express her gender identity in a supportive environment. But the reality that so many transgender women, whether they're of color or not, experience is that employment is definitely jeopardized, safety jeopardized, mental health jeopardized. And then when you have all of those things, It's an unfortunate...
And also the physical violence that they're vulnerable to all the time. You know, the name-calling, the spitting on, the pushing, the threatening to the beatings, you know, just even from strangers. I mean, it's a very dangerous world. That's the reality. And most people are fetishized in some kind of a way and pushed into the sex industry. These are full, talented, brilliant human beings that are being marginalized to this, you know. You can be in the cabaret or you can be a sex worker. Those are your two choices.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, so vicious of America, I think, to see. And I think there's a part of Alexis that got really sick and tired of battling society endlessly. Because it's just exhausting.
Yeah, and I think that especially if you are an emotionally tender person to begin with, sensitive person, a person who is empathetic or compassionate, I think that as a person who identifies those qualities in myself, like, there are times, for example, when I can barely scroll through my social media because the stories that I see, you know, whether it is something about animals, you know, being mistreated, which, oh, God, that really gets me. Or people around the world living these existences where so little value is placed upon them and, you know, their lives are endangered. And, you know, those things can take a tremendous emotional toll on you. And when it, the closer it becomes to your actual reality, the more exhausting that must be.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like a constant punch, getting punched in the face all the time. I'm so proud of Alexis for living her truth and really putting it out there in the world. And, you know, a friend of mine, Bambi Salcedo, do you know her from the Trans Latino Coalition?
I don't know her.
Trans Latina Alliance. Yeah, she's great. Latina trans activist and great program in LA. She said to me, you know, we walked away from our male privilege when we lived our truth as being trans women. And that's true. It's like, God, every trans person living their reality is so brave. So brave. Every single day to deal with the onslaught of what they deal with in our world.
Yeah, it...
And it's hard.
It is hard. And it's hard. And, you know, I definitely think that all of those things that you have discussed and we've discussed it are part of what we need to address, for example, if we want to reduce HIV infections. And when you look at HIV infections specifically, the target groups are always the highest rates of infection are among people who are societally devalued, trans people, people of color. Those are the highest rates of infection, and it's because of the fact that there's some level where people take upon themselves the idea that they are either not valued or the opportunities for advancement aren't there, so that, for example, a person who's kind of feels that their only option is sex work, and when your money and your income and your ability to take care of yourself depend upon putting yourself in riskier situations than one might choose on their own, then the rate of infection increases.
Yeah, and they're also more vulnerable to rape. People are more likely to just rape them. The same people that are probably calling them names and beating them are more likely to be raping them. I mean, you know, we talk about college campus rape. Well, even though it's a much smaller percentage of people, our trans, LGBTQ, and particularly our trans brothers and sisters have the highest incidence of being sexually assaulted in campuses in college. So it's even these kids who are going to college, you know, they're not prostituting. They're in college, and they're getting, you know, more vulnerable to being attacked. So... yeah, there's something wrong with society that they also think that these are people that they can victimize. But did you read that incredible article? I think it was in the New York Times, I don't know, maybe 4 or 6 months ago, about HIV in rural South in black communities?
I did not.
Oh, my God. I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's amazing. And it's super disturbing. Okay, yes, because of funding cuts and all of this. I mean, and they don't even know about PrEP, like all of these things that haven't even been made available there. But also there's a super infection there. It's like incredibly viral, carries a very high viral load, this particular strain. So these kids are dying in months. I mean, it's really crazy. And nobody's talking about it, and nobody's really doing anything about it, because these are poor black men, young black men.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I definitely am aware of the level of privilege that I have by living in San Francisco, which is and remains at the forefront of research and treatment for HIV infections, where it's a topic of conversation that people have, and even though we are here, I can tell you that there is still stigma relating to HIV infection. And
yeah.
And the stigma that comes with HIV infection is so different than stigma that comes with any other infectious disease or any other disease in general. You know, when a person is diagnosed with lupus or cancer or something of that nature, the likelihood that you'll place significant blame on that individual is greatly diminished.
But it's really crazy.
And I do understand some of that because of the fact that I think that individuals, at least in many places, are more educated about HIV than we were certainly 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or 30 years ago. But at the same time, I think that part of the problem that we face in terms of HIV is the idea, bringing this full circle, that at a minimum, HIV no longer kills. You know,
I knew a guy growing up He was a much older man. He was a virgin his whole life, like till he was like 45 or something. He'd never been with anybody, a man or a woman. But he was a gay man. The first time he had sex, he got AIDS. And, you know, he knew about AIDS, but part of it was the societal shame of even being gay for him, even being prepared. I used to work at Planned Parenthood when I was, it was my first job. When I was 15, I'd go around to schools and talk about birth control. And it's no different than birth control. Everybody is like, how are people still getting HIV? Okay. People are still getting pregnant, having unwanted pregnancies. People are having sex with each other. This is part of what humans do. And yes, we should be more prepared. But also I think, like, for this guy, he was carrying around a societal shame even about who he was.
Right.
And there's also the world punishing him and him punishing himself.
Yeah.
I don't know how we change this narrative. You know, I'm really excited to hear that there's more HIV dating sites, HIV positive dating sites. I really hope we can make the shift to a time where HIV is not something that people feel that they need to carry, you know, as a burden or a shame. And where we can just openly discuss it and support people that are HIV positive and they don't have to feel endangered in society for that they won't be loved or that other people will judge them or any of that. I think talking about it more, and there's a lot of HIV still.
Yes. Even in a world where we have PrEP and PEP and all of these things, mm-hmm. You know, those are concepts that people are fighting against widely distributing. The idea that for sexually active gay men that we would offer the idea of PrEP, which could prevent HIV infection, that's something that many places don't want to explore or offer. And I don't understand that concept. I mean, if you can allow somebody to take medication like on a daily basis that would prevent the spread and transmission of HIV, that to me is exactly like what you talked about, the idea of allowing for birth control, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the same thing as a woman taking a birth control pill every day. It's your personal protection of your own self to decide your destiny, because condoms aren't 100% effective all the time, you know. Well, they're not always properly used. But, I mean, I think whatever it takes to bring down the HIV, you know, infection rate, we should support all the way. But definitely demystifying it and, you know, telling all our brothers and sisters out there who are HIV positive, we love them and it's okay. They got nothing to be ashamed of, you know.
With your passion for political issues and issues relating to topics of such as HIV and the LGBTQ community, is there like an internal drive for you to participate at some point in a higher profile film role that delves into those issues?
Am I looking for a higher profile film role to kind of deal with some of those issues? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I mean, because those are subject matters that we don't get to see. We're seeing increasing stories of LGBTQ issues, but to this day, like, the number of roles that in films that deal with those are still minimal. But one would think that if an actress of the profile of yourself might be interested publicly in something like that, then who knows?
Well, I'm definitely interested in that. I mean, I'm happy to see that there's more visibility, but it's really not very much the case with our trans brothers and sisters at all still. I mean, I'm really excited about that show, I Am Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really good. But, you know, the reality is there's still almost no parts for trans artists. So I definitely think that has to change. I mean, I've been talking to some people about some ideas I have for a project that centers around the transgender star, you know, lead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So hopefully at some point we'll do that. I have this other movie that I'm supposed to direct first, so it might be a little ways down the pike, but I definitely would like to do that.
Wow. Well, I am so excited, Patricia, that you agreed to talk today, and I am most appreciative of the fact that you were not only open to, but embraced the idea of allowing our conversation to be in-depth and emotional and with substance, because too often I think that, you know, conversations center around a current film project or a book project or something like that, and there can be some superficial element of emotional and political impact, but I really believe that our conversation today extended well beyond that and into something that could inspire and allow people to feel that there are people who they admire and appreciate on their screens, that whether it's television or film, who are compassionate to and understand their perspective and their struggles that they have on a daily basis.
Well, thank you for the great questions. I mean, you know, this isn't your normal interview where you hang up like, oh, whatever, you know. I just gave the same answers that I gave to the last 10 people about the movie and where we shot and what was funny and how was it fun and did I like my part and how did I like working with this person. But there's a higher stakes because we're talking about more critical things. So I hope I didn't say anything upsetting or offensive or that would in any way be harmful to anybody, you know.
I don't perceive that anything said in our conversation would be offensive or necessarily could be misconstrued. I do think that the unfortunate state that we live in has people very sensitive to subject matter. And I think that because when we deal with people who are so consistently on the defense, you know, they're on the defense, they're prepared, like whether you're walking out your door, you're like ready for the fight, you know, or
right.
When you're listening to an interview, I think that's the unfortunate situation that society has reached, where we are almost conditioned to want to take offense even when people are openly and obviously supportive. But I don't perceive that anything said during our conversation has fallen into that.
Yeah, I remember, like, you know, recently during this whole Hurricane Irma thing, I guess a manatee got stranded on the beach, and then some people saved the manatee, and then I saw some animal rights activists writing, "Don't put that manatee in captivity," while they were waiting for this hurricane to pass. Like, wait a second, really, you're mad at the manatee savers?
Right, I mean...
For saving the manatee. It's like crazy.
Yeah, and I think that that is the place where... I definitely think that people, when we have a cause that's important to us, and that I speak for myself, like, there are times when I can agree 99% with something that somebody's saying, but that one thing is the sticking point for me. I'm like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
But I try to go through life looking at the bigger picture. Like, you know, again, going back to my co-host Pearl, she and I have very different perspectives on life. You know, we have very different experiences in life. She's trans. I'm not. She's a woman of color. I'm not, you know, like, so there are things that we see from different perspectives, but I always try to say, and one of the things that has worked in our relationship is I'm like, okay, we're allowed to have different points of view. We're allowed to have different life experiences. And we,
right.
You know, and what matters to us can be based largely on those experiences. And, you know, there's a person who wants to, their thing is that they want to make sure that animals aren't kept in captivity. And, you know, good for them for speaking up. But at the same time, you're like, let's just put this a little bit in perspective here. Like, we didn't run out and capture this manatee because we wanted to put it in a zoo.
It's just like, wait a minute, you want them to further risk their life and go into the giant, you know, storm? Just let them put the manatee where they need to till this storm blows over. I don't think they plan on keeping this manatee.
Can you imagine they have a giant aquarium in their living room and they're like, we caught this amazing manatee during the storm.
Oh, my God.
We lost everything we owned.
The other thing about it is, which is good and horrible about social media, is everything's like immediately responded to and immediately answered and not thought through and not dealt with through managers and publicists and all these things that will check them all first and clean up the story and do whatever they do. But what's great about that also is it's all a learning process. Like, this is how I feel about HIV acceptance and what I want to say to all my HIV positive or those brothers and sisters who have AIDS. We love you, accept you, and I want the world, I want you to know you didn't do anything wrong, and you have nothing to be ashamed of. But somebody will educate me, too, and I'm open to education, and I'm excited about that part of it. Like, maybe we're talking about PrEP, and I'm interested in what are people's arguments for and against it, and why, you know, what's their fear about it, and all of these conversations, I think, I know how to grow.
Yeah, I think that that willingness to be educated, though, is, I think it's unfortunately rare. I mean, that is something that, that on my, on our podcast, for example, we have that. Like, I think that because of the fact that I'm keenly aware that my co-host has a different life experience, that I have opinions that are based on my experience. But if somebody that I care about presents a different perspective and a different experience, I can say, well, you know, I never thought about that because I've never experienced that. Like, you know, I definitely have my feelings about the life experience of Black men in America. But I've never lived that life. So when somebody says, well, my experience has been this, I certainly am not going to refute that, because if that's their experience, you know, and for me, for example, as a person who has two Black nephews who are teenagers, I'm terrified for them at times. And so I want to know more about what that life experience is like.
Yeah.
You know, not unlike you speaking to the fact that having a trans sister made you aware of what that experience is like in a way that would never have been presented to you had you not had that experience.
Yeah. I mean, I remember with my son growing up, and also my daughter, I mean, I said to my son so many times, you know, we love you and totally accept you and it's all great. And if you're gay, that's fine. It doesn't matter. It's awesome. It's great. It's wonderful. It's all normal. It's all fine. I said it to him so many times. He goes, Mom, I'm sorry. I'm not gay. I'm sorry. I hope you love me if I'm not gay.
That's hilarious. My mom said to me when I came out, she's like, well, I've always suspected, but I didn't want to say anything because if you weren't, I didn't want to offend you. I didn't want to.
Oh my gosh.
It's good though that we live in a world where kids have to apologize for being straight. You know, like that's. So. I had an experience a few years ago when the hurricane hit Haiti, and there were so many children that were displaced or whatever. So my sister has three beautiful children. I have a niece who's in college and two nephews who are in high school, and they are biracial. And at the time, I said to my mom, you know, how would you react if I adopted like a Black baby from Haiti? Like, what would your thoughts be? And she said, she said, "Oh, honey, I don't know that I could. I don't know at this point how I would even deal with having a white grandchild. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't even know what that experience is like. You know, so it doesn't. A child's a child, and I, you know, a grandbaby's a grandbaby. So I was like, okay, yeah. Good. You know, we're lucky that we have that life experience because there's so many people not the case. And again, like, yeah. That's where we're privileged.
Again, without, I mean, you know, there's so many layers of privilege because besides being a white woman in America, a blonde white woman who grew up looking a certain way, living in a certain town, having success in a certain business, making a certain amount of money, all of that privilege on top of itself, if I had grown up in a different part of America, if I hadn't had Alexis as a sibling, a teacher, and as one of my best friends, I don't know what my perspective would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like Alexis opened this whole world up to me, to feeling and thinking and wondering and and knowing and fear and understanding of dangers and all of these things. I mean, I don't know who I would have been or what my perspective would have been if I grew up in a different part of America and I didn't have that experience.
Yeah, it's when we realize that people being different from us isn't something to be tolerated. It's something to be grateful for because we are open to their experiences and we get to see the world in a way that we would not otherwise.
Yeah, I feel like without Alexis as my teacher, opening the world with real human experience, I would be more limited as a person.
Yeah. Well, Patricia, thank you so much. Again, I'm just really grateful that we've had this opportunity. You are spectacular. I wish you nothing but great success in your career.
You too. Thank you. Keep up the great work and great questions. Well, and I'll plug your podcast.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, send me some of them that you're proud of and you want to get the message out.
Awesome. I will do that. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
You too. Okay, bye.
That was Academy Award winner Patricia Arquette. Obviously, we talked extensively about her sister, Alexis Arquette. She's also of the famous Arquette family that includes brother David, who, of course, everybody knows for his longtime marriage to Courtney Cox, and his roles with her in the Scream films and much more, and her sister, Rosanna Arquette, is iconic for her role in Desperately Seeking Susan. Patricia Arquette won an Oscar for the 2014 film Boyhood, starred in television's Medium as well as CSI Cyber, and is currently working on film projects including Toy Story 4. I'm Poya Del Mar. You're listening to Party Foul Radio, and we will be back with more right after this. Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you by sponsorship from Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants offer a full line of personal lubrication needs from water and silicone-based lubrication to masturbation creams, anal creams, and even a line of popular male enhancement products. For all of your personal needs for the bedroom, visit a fine retailer near you to pick up Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants, a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. Welcome back to Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Poya Del Mar, and I'm excited to bring to you our next interview at this time. Astrid S. is a Norwegian pop star whose latest single, Think Before I Talk, is making waves throughout Europe as well as breaking into U.S. markets. The song is Astrid's sixth top 10 single at home in Norway, and recently became her first number one single on the charts at home. Meanwhile, she has collaborated with artists such as Avicii and even laid down background vocals for a single from Katy Perry's latest album. Just last year, Astrid opened dates throughout Europe for Troye Sivan
And beginning this month, October 2017, she'll be performing around Europe as well as across the world. Please welcome at this time to Party Foul Radio, the adorable Astrid S., everyone. Hi, Astrid. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I am very well. Thanks for talking to me today. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for taking your time.
Of course. Of course. I wanted to talk to you. Of course, the success of Think Before I Talk is becoming overwhelming for you. It was your first number one single at home in Norway, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So what is it like to see yourself growing as a pop star at home?
It's a big relief because I feel like a lot of the results takes a while. So, you know, last year I worked my ass off, and it's just really nice to see that this year everything pays off, and everything I'm doing this year hopefully pays off next year, and, you know, things take time, but... Yeah, it would be sad if you put in a lot of work and then nothing happens.
Well, fortunately for you, you're not experiencing that. And in fact, you're beginning to break out around the world. So I'm curious what it's like to see yourself evolving as an international and global sensation. Curious, you're such a young artist, and what is it that musically sort of like gets your creativity and juices flowing?
I think life in general, just people and happenings, and I don't know, everything, like a discussion or, you know, talking to my friends, like anything. It could be me watching a movie, and that could make me really inspired. Life in general, I guess.
I'm sure that for you, being so young, you may not have had a great deal of exposure to the LGBTQ community, but supporting somebody like Troye Sivan on tour throughout Europe undoubtedly opened that community and that audience up to you a lot more. And I was wondering if you could talk about that experience and in ways that it might have enlightened you as a person.
Community and to be able to tour with him opened up so many doors for me, and I got to know so many new people that have taught me so much, and I'm just so thankful to also have, you know, fans of my own that are part of that community, and how, you know, when it's just the best compliment ever if someone tells me that, you know, they listen to my music and that makes them, you know, forget all their problems for a while, and maybe they feel like they belong and they feel understood or anything. And yeah, I just feel they are so nice. And on Troye Sivan's tour, everyone in the audience really for me, and I really felt like they wanted me to feel good on stage and feel good about myself. So, yeah, I have nothing but love for them.
You have had the opportunity throughout your career, even at this early stage, to work with, in some capacity, a lot of really well-known artists, from Avicii to Shawn Mendes, and even doing background vocals for Katy Perry. And I was wondering what it was like for such a young person to be working with artists who presumably you have grown up either listening to or are largely probably a fan of yourself.
But it's so cool to think that I, or to to have been able to be a part of his project and his first album, and he's been so successful, and it's so well-deserved. So I'm just, yeah, very proud to have worked with him. That's probably, maybe one of the favorite things I've done ever.
Say that again?
It's probably one of the favorite things I've done ever.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, he is somebody that has had tremendous success. And then you have people like Avicii and Katy Perry who are practically legends in the industry. So, I mean, how is it that you got pulled in to do background vocals for her? I'm curious about that.
Oh, it was just super boring cancer. I was in the studio. Someone came by and asked me if I wanted to come into their studio and just play some background vocals on a song they worked on. And bam. Done.
Wow, that's great. That's a dream come true for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So now.
Yeah, I love the song, so I'm so happy I could be a part of it.
As your career is progressing, you have worked. You're definitely strongly in the pop dance genre of music, and I was wondering if that's where you envision yourself being long term, or if it's only a part of your musical exploration that you would like to have.
You know, how I grow and where I'm at in my life. I think it's really hard to think long-term with music, or especially with making music, because it's just all about, you know, what makes me inspired. And you never know, like, maybe in a year, country music could be the thing that inspires me the most. And it's what I want to write and what I want to sing, perform, and do. And then I would definitely do that, if that's how I feel. But it's feels like I'm going to stick to pop for a little longer, at least.
I was wondering if you could talk about what the influences are like in countries like your own of Norway and Denmark and all of that, the whole area. As an American listener, I think that your area of Europe and the world specifically is one where we don't know a great deal about the pop music that is happening there. We only know of artists as they cross over into the U.S. mainstream. And I was just curious what the music scene is like in Scandinavia.
Well, in Norway, at least, it's very small. Everyone knows everyone. And everyone is very supportive of each other. And, you know, there's not a lot of radio stations in Norway, and, like, there's not a lot of music blogs. So the few that are very big. And you know, everyone, if there's anyone new coming out or a new song coming out, everyone will probably know about it, which I think is really cool that it's so small and intimate. In Norway, at least.
What is LGBTQ nightlife? What is gay nightlife like in Norway?
I think you're asking the wrong person because I never go out in Norway. I think I've been to a club, like, twice maybe, in Oslo.
Wow.
Or in Norway in general. So you're really asking the wrong person. I have no idea, to be honest.
I think that's great in a way. I mean, it's kind of how I feel about it. When you're at home, you're just like, oh, whatever, I'm going to stay at home. And then when I go on tour or I travel or something.
Yeah, right.
Then I definitely want to find out what it's like.
Yeah.
So I know that your single Think Before I Talk is starting to make inroads around the world, but surely you guys have new music that's planned, and I was wondering what you can tell us about that.
So, I'll definitely try to make an album next year. I don't know what direction I want it to be yet, because I've been so busy, so I can't wait. I think I'm going to go back in the studio early next year, and I'll start writing and exploring, and I only think, like, we have a couple songs ready for an album that I think might have a shot of making it. I just want everything to be great, so the goal is to write better songs than all the songs I have right now. So, I don't know, I've been very influenced by 80s music lately. It would be cool to, like, I don't know, maybe mix some 80s influences up with, like, something urban or, you know, more Scandi pop or electronic pop. We'll see, but I am. Yeah, definitely an album next year.
How is it possible that a 20-year-old is influenced by the 80s?
I grew up listening to my mom and dad. They have later on I've just explored, you know, Queen. I've listened a lot to lately, and Toto, I think they're great. And then I really love the 1975, and they're very, like, I feel like they have some 80s influences to their music, so, yeah.
So, with an album that you're projecting for the horizon for next year, between now and the time that you release an album, what is the next project that you're working on that we should expect before then?
Nothing, really. I'm just going to keep on, you know, working on promoting my new single throughout the year, and then, you know, I have the tour. I'm on a tour right now, so we'll be touring in Europe in October, and then, you know, we're doing an own tour in November. We're going to New Zealand and Australia, and then I'll go home for Christmas, and then I'll get started with the album.
Yeah, I did notice that you're having some early success in New Zealand, which seems like a really far ways from Norway, but that's fantastic.
Yeah, right? I think New Zealand is one of the countries that I've had the most airplay, which is kind of funny and cool. So I'm very excited to go. I've never been.
Well, Astrid, thank you for talking today. I appreciate it and wish you the best of luck as your projects begin to roll out in 2018.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye.
Maybe I should think before I talk. I get emotional and words come out all wrong. Sometimes I'm more honest than I want. So maybe I should think before. Maybe next time I'll think before I talk.
Hallelujah, this is Shangela, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Polio and Pearl, honey. Hallelujah.
Clock the bag.
And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. We just heard our fabulous interview with the adorable Astrid S. Go check out Think Before I Talk on YouTube. Or if you're in Europe, she's getting ready to go on concert tour this month. You can catch her all across dates throughout Europe. That's Astrid S. Go check her out, you guys. And thanks, Astrid, for being on Party Foul Radio. It's fun. This is the second week in a row that we've had somebody who's collaborated with Troye Sivan on the show.
All right, Troye Sivan.
So Astrid S. toured with Troye Sivan, and last week we heard from Griffin. If you did not tune into that episode, hello, what the hell's your problem? Go back and listen.
Go back and listen.
Go back to listen, and Griffin was talking about his collaborations with Troye Sivan. I'm working to bring... I know Troye Sivan's got fans all over the world, so I'm working to get him on with us.
Let's do it.
So it would be super fun. By the way, speaking of some interviews that we're working on for upcoming episodes, I'm really excited because, Pearl, I think that we are this close to getting on Lea Delaria with us. So,
what's her name?
Lea Delaria.
I don't know who that is.
She's like the super butch one on Orange is the New Black.
There's a lot of butch women on Orange is the New Black.
She's the one who's like got the tattoos up and down her arms, and she's short and kind of stocky.
With the black hair?
Yes.
Okay, I like her.
Yeah, she
What's her real name?
Lea Delaria.
That's a pretty name. Come on, Lea Delaria. So dainty.
Well, Lea Delaria, by the way, will be in San Francisco this weekend that's upcoming. She's going to be here for a big, I can't remember what it's called, but it's going to be an event that's happening here in San Francisco this weekend. But she's also, we're going to be talking to her, fingers crossed, really, really soon about her upcoming series of concerts around the United States, because people don't know this necessarily about her, but she's also an amazing singer and live performer, and she's got some incredible people who are going to be popping up on various shows with her. People like Jennifer Nettles, the country music superstar who was with Sugarland. A lot of people are going to be on this tour with her. So looking to possibly have Lea Delaria on very soon. Amongst other people, oh, I also sent off an email just today to our good friend here at the podcast, Peaches Christ. Peaches Christ is touring with Bob the Drag Queen and Jinx Monsoon with their hit stage production of Hokum Pokum. And it's a spoof, obviously, of Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get Jinx Monsoon to be on with us as well. Later this month, hopefully, fingers crossed, we're going to have Milk, because Milk also said that she would come on with us in September, so we have to since it's now October, means I have to get back with her. Hopefully she'll still be available to get with us. So we've got a lot of fun stuff upcoming on future episodes here of Party Foul Radio. I want you guys to keep listening in. Of course, you know you have to follow us at Party Foul Radio on Facebook and Twitter. So you can stay up to date on everything we are doing. So definitely check in with us about that. There's some other stuff I wanted to tell you about. Oh, another thing that I wanted to mention, it being Halloween month, you guys. October is the month of Halloween. So our good buddy, Glenn Douglas Packard, we had him on a while back talking about his horror film, his LGBT-themed horror film called Pitchfork. So Pitchfork Pitchfork is going to be available on DVD this month. And there is a new comic book that Glenn Douglas Packard has put out. So look up Glenn Douglas Packard, look up Pitchfork, and celebrate Halloween with an LGBTQ twist by checking out Pitchfork. And I always say this, support people who support us, support members of our own community, because boo, if we don't do it, we really cannot look down our nose at anybody else who won't do it either.
Right.
So support our own, bitch. So Pearl, what is it that you have got going on this weekend? Is it a busy one for you?
This weekend was originally supposed to be...
her month off, or weekend off?
It's supposed to be my weekend off, but I just gave AJSF my schedule, and they're going to send me a schedule sometime within the next 24 to 48 hours to let me know when I will be scheduled to work.
Right on. Very nice.
I really do enjoy it.
So you're going to be going back to AJSF this weekend?
Possibly.
Possibly. Okay.
Yeah. And if not, girl, then I am living my life like it's golden and staying my ass away from any kind of show. Maybe I might go to the movies. Who knows? Shit.
So, well, I am going to be with Carne Asada for brunch on Saturday afternoon at the Lookout. So if you are in or around the Castro, definitely come and hit us up. See what we're up to over there. That is always a fun time. I love the Lookout. I love the people at the Lookout. I love the staff there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, an afternoon show with Carney is going to be a lot of fun. There's a strong likelihood that I will be that evening back over at my Divas Royale show. But, oh, speaking of El Toro Lounge, you guys, this is very exciting for me.
Are they doing the renovations?
They're not doing the renovations just yet, but they are definitely moving towards that, I know for a fact. And just this past weekend, my face and name went up for the very first time ever on a pro wrestling flyer.
Oh, cute. Congratulations.
Thanks. Like, look.
You're really excited about that.
I am really excited about it. And it's like, it's hanging. My face and name are on this wrestling flyer hanging outside of El Toro right now.
Oh, look. You look good in it, too. All right, bitch.
Want to know the crazy part? Like, you guys, I mean, it's a beautiful photo. Like, this is a photo of the two of us together. Donovan Troy, the voice. Donovan Troy, who's the Wrestling for Charity general manager. And we took that picture at the Sports Expo in the springtime. There's no Photoshop, nothing. Good girl. That's what happens, bitch.
There's no filter, no nothing.
Nothing.
Huh.
It's just a gorgeous photo, bitch. But we are... It's very exciting to me, you guys. You know that I love my pro wrestling. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been, like, launching this other podcast to deal just with pro wrestling so I don't make y'all hear all about it. But this really relates to very much just to me and my, like, dreams or whatever. And for the first time ever, you guys, I'm on a professional wrestling flyer as a featured performer. That, if you are interested in coming and seeing it and you're in the Bay Area, we're going to be Thursday, November 2nd. It's a Thursday evening at El Toro Lounge or El Toro Nightclub on San Bruno Avenue. That's at 2470 San Bruno Avenue in San Francisco. It's only $20 to get reserved ringside seats, or $15 for general admission.
Not too expensive at all, ladies.
Yes. Pearl, you need to put it in your calendar so you can come out and see your bitch. You've been saying...
You're right.
She just gave me the side eye.
If you're about to wrestle, girl, I am there. It's like... Are you wrestling?
I'm going to be... I don't know that I'm going to be... quote, wrestling, but I'm in storylines throughout the evening, so I'm an integral part of this show. So, all just right. So you know.
Okay.
I want all my friends who are local who, like, just, I mean, and I will tell you this.
I don't know. I don't want to get beat up in the audience.
You're not going to get beat up in the audience, bitch. I don't want to give away any storyline possibilities.
Is Lady Flower going to be there?
She's not. Kiko the Fallen Flower is not going to be there. But we're having Thunder Rosa. Look at, she's so cool.
Oh, right. Come on, makeup.
She is the women's champion. Her name is Thunder Rosa. She actually wrestles under a mask for a national wrestling organization that people can see on their televisions every week. But I'm really not supposed to reveal what that is because it would give away her identity on TV. But so anyway, it's going to be a fun show. It's benefiting the Portola Neighborhood Association. The Portola Neighborhood Association. Congratulations, by the way, to the Portola Neighborhood Association and the Portola Neighborhood itself, because they recently just did a relighting of the historic theater in the district, which is very similar in design and stuff to the Castro Theater. So it's a fabulous new space. It's available right in the backyard of people who live in that area. And I can't wait. We're bringing pro wrestling to the Portola Neighborhood.
Oh, right.
On November 2nd. So that's 1 month away, you guys. Come and check us out. It's all for charity. Look, here I am. It's like, I took pictures, y'all. Here's our wrestling poster, all surrounded by all those, like, Latin bands and whatnot.
I think that's a great venue for it.
I think it's going to be fantastic for it. And I think people are so excited. And the Portola Neighborhood Association is embracing me so much. We're, like, going to be teaching a drag class over at FDR, which is Ferment, Drink, and Repeat, the FDR brewery on San Bruno Avenue, which is a huge part of the Portola Neighborhood Association. And this past weekend, some of the people like Philip Hua and other people in the Neighborhood Association came to Divas Royale just to support the show, just to show some love for us. So it's really nice. I've lived in this neighborhood for over a decade, and now there's finally an organization like the Portola Neighborhood Association, which supports us, like supports me, like, you know, and like, so is doing stuff to bring cool things into the neighborhood, and it makes a huge difference.
That's amazing. Yeah. So I grew up in the Excelsior and Portola, and none of this was around when I was younger.
Okay. Pearl just showed. So there is in the Portola neighborhood, there's a huge like rift between people who call it the Portola. Like
and the Excelsior.
Who call it the Portola and people who call it Portola.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, but I was like, girl, let me not even get into it.
Right. Well, the thing is, I always pronounce it the Portola as well.
Yeah.
But people within the Portola Neighborhood Association refer to it as Portola.
I do. Some people, because I grew up in Portola. And
right. So
it was always known as Portola.
So I don't know. Portola. Portola. Tomato, tomato.
Some white girl told you that.
No, an Asian queen told me that. But
that sounds about right, too.
So anyway, so I don't know, but it's really cool because of the fact that when I first moved here, the Portola neighborhood was like Asian markets and like randomness. There wasn't anything really that cool or interesting. And that's why, even though when I first moved here, my very first friend in the city lived right like a block from Silver and San Bruno. And we never even hung out over there when he lived there. He now is my friend who lives in the Philippines, who I went and visited last year. But, you know, like, they're doing stuff to reinvigorate the neighborhood. They're really pumping it up. They're, you know, supporting fun events like, you know, Drag Queen Bingo, which they brought me in for. And now we've got Wrestling for Charity hopefully coming. And let me take that back. Wrestling for Charity is coming, but hopefully we'll be coming back on a regular basis. So all fun stuff to be expected in the very near future. And I'm going to be really integral in that wrestling show on the 2nd of November. So please come out and check us out. Support the show. It is partial proceeds benefiting the Portola Neighborhood Association, which is a registered 501c3 nonprofit. And yeah, that's kind of my weekend in a nutshell.
Well.
So Pearl keeps checking her iPhone watch or whatever it is. Her Apple watch. Bitch has an Apple watch. Good for her.
My best friend gave it to me as a gift.
Oh, okay. Good. Like, that's an expensive fucking gift.
Right. Anyway, it keeps going off, and I'm just now, like, kind of breaking it in. So every time it goes off, like, I just kind of want to look at it to see what's going on.
Meanwhile, you know that she's actually aching to get the fuck up out of here because she's like, I got a cocktail date.
Actually.
I got a cocktail date.
Anyway.
Y'all, she's going to probably, before she leaves, she's probably going to have to go up in my shower and use the douche hose.
Oh, no.
Maybe she had some coffee earlier. She'd be like, don't come a knocking when I'm flushing things out.
Negative.
So.
I can't even.
Y'all, that reminds me of the time Angina came and stayed with me. I've had the pleasure of having a number of my friends from Drag Race stay with me here at my apartment. And I think I might have told this story on a past podcast, but it bears telling again. So Angina and her husband, Ryan, came and stayed with me. And my daughter, Megan Pixel, was here also. So there was a fucking slumber party. Mm-hmm. And the next day we were getting up and we were going to go to breakfast. And at, like,
Do they get here and be like, where the fuck am I supposed to sleep?
No, I had them set up with like an air mattress in the drag room. I clean. Okay. Y'all, like, when people come to stay, I do clean the place up because, you know, guests. But at any rate, so we all get up and we're, like, getting ready. And then Anjana is like, I got a shower, girl. And I want to remind you that she's, like,
five feet tall. Yeah,
she's, like, 5'3", maybe, something like that.
If that.
So she goes in, and closes the bathroom door. And I hear the shower turn on and, like, the water running. And then she goes to get in the shower and she's like, a huge douche in here. And I was like,
probably like the size of her like arm.
I was like, sorry about it, bitch. I said, just pretend that it's a back massager. Just get in there and go. Just pretend it's a back massager, bitch. So yeah, I remember telling maybe at least if not this story, another one, because when my niece lived here with me,
it was your niece that you helped
like
before.
I told her that I used that the hose was up in there to wash the dogs with.
I can't.
Anyway.
Girl, every time, I'm sure, oh, I wonder if she's tried it.
What?
Anyway, washing the dogs with that
hose? I do wash the dogs with it.
Oh, Lord.
I really do wash it. I mean, it's just a hose, y'all. So, I, like, lather up the dogs, and then when it's time to rinse them, I, like, wash them with that. I don't have a bathtub. I only have a shower stall. So, like, when it comes time to wash the dogs, I'm in there with them, and, like, you know, so we both come out flea free.
Oh.
So, anyway. All right, you guys. I think that's going to wrap up this episode. It's what an informative episode it is.
Very.
I do want to remind you, you can follow me on Twitter at TheGlamazonPDM, as in Poyo Del Mar, TheGlamazonPDM on Twitter. And Pearl?
You can follow me everywhere on any social media at Pearl Tease, and that's TEESE. No porno, honey.
No porno, honey. And no coffee on a date.
None.
All right, you guys. For episode
86, you guys.
We are out of here. Bye. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Girl, you better work. Work. It's over. Work. It's over. Work. It's over. Work.